friends. Thank you so much for joining us again after, you know, what feels like a little break for another episode of What Page Are You On? It me, Bethany Rutter. I'm here with my good friend and business partner.
It me, Alice Slater.
I always like hold my hand out to you to say your name as if you don't know exactly what you have to do, because we've been doing this for some time now.
I always think of that person that said that I sound like I'm leaving, like recording my voicemail message.
Alice Slater. Yeah, so I was away in Norway for a couple of weeks visiting my darling husband, who was there for a month. So that is why we have been conspicuously absent from your ear holes.
We thought that we would be able to record ahead and you wouldn't even notice, but...
Alas, no, life got in the way, as so often it does. But we are back and maybe better than ever, who knows? With an episode that I'm into, man. Describe the episode.
So it's something that we've wanted to do for a long time and we've been asked for many times as well. It's one of my favourite areas of fiction. The humble short story. One of the reasons why it's been difficult to do this episode, I think, is because, you know, each collection will contain multitudes. So sometimes you can pair individual stories with other works or with collections, but it's quite difficult to pair two collections together.
But, not so. Not now.
I only think we've bloody swung it.
With a very popular short story collection of recent times, plus one... that is out this week.
This week.
This very week. And will become a very popular short story collection of recent times.
Undoubtedly so.
So, would you care to introduce them?
So we have Salt Slow by Julia Armfield.
Which is out this week.
Which is out this week. And then we have Her Body and Other Parties by Carmen Maria Machado.
Which was out, when was that? Last year, year before?
It was due to come out, I can be very exact about this, January 2018 in the UK, but then it got bumped to before Christmas. So it actually came out 2017.
Interesting.
Which I can be precise because I bought this edition in New Orleans because I couldn't wait, like in October. And then was sent a beautiful hardback of the UK edition.
With
not
the, like,
2 weeks later.
The spicy lime green. That one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one I have, which is very cool. Okay. So how we're going to do this is we're going to like go through the stories, because each of them has about 7-ish, and I feel like that's a reasonable amount for us to talk to you about.
Yeah, and we may not go in order, we'll just bump around.
Did you love them? How do you feel about these books?
I love them.
Yeah, me too.
I love them. So I feel like Salt Slow, Julia Armfield, we got on board quite early. We got sent early proofs. Like, we saw her speak at...
Picador Showcase. Oh, I saw her speak at the Picador Showcase.
But before that, we saw her at the RCW.
No, I'd seen her that week. Because that was the Picador Showcase.
See, you couldn't come to. She always has to be in there
I know,
first.
I'm so,
you know,
sorry.
I mean?
It's because you couldn't come to the thing. We went to two events in 1 week.
Well, which is a lot.
We were meant to go to two events in 1 week.
Yeah.
I went on my own to the Picador Showcase. And then you joined me for the RCW showcase, which
yes.
is Julia's agency, and Picador is her publisher. So that is why there were two events in the same week. But yeah, I definitely remember seeing her. She was very nervous at the Picador showcase because I don't think she'd done a reading before.
Aww.
So, but I was like, it's going to bang. Everyone knows it's going to bang. And it did bang.
And it hasn't even truly banged yet because it's only just... I think it's starting to appear in shops now.
Yes.
And then Her Body and Other Parties, despite buying an early copy in America because I was so excited, and despite being sent one by the publisher, because I have to read so many short story collections for the short story salons at Gower Street, which are more sporadic now, but at the time were more regular, and then also I review collections for Ms. Lexia, I just kind of, if I miss the boat on something, like if I don't do an event with someone and if I don't review it for the magazine, generally I end up leaving it.
Yeah.
So then I just, you know, I just don't get around to it because there's other collections that I need to prioritize to decide whether or not I'm going to review them. So I just like missed the boat and yeah.
Here we are.
Went on holiday.
A year and a bit later. Yeah.
Time to catch up.
Our snack of choice today is chocolates because we know we're not allowed to eat biscuits because you can hear us, but hopefully you won't be able to hear us eating chocolates.
ASMR. It's the ASMR portion of the episode where Bethany's eating a liqueur.
Yep.
Alright, so did you think that Her Body and Other Parties banged?
I did.
What is your relationship with the book?
Basically, I had highs and lows. with her body and other parties in a way that I did not with Sort Slow. I feel Sort Slow is more consistent. I feel like my her body and other parties, there were things I really loved. There was one bit I absolutely hated.
I absolutely, without a doubt, know which story that is.
Yep. I did something that I have never done with a short story collection before, and I just stopped reading it, and I skipped to the next story.
But see, that is the beauty of short story collections, yep. is that, especially stories that are long, you know, like, if there's a story in Her Body and Other Parties, which is, what, 40-odd pages, 50 pages long?
No, it's way more than, you mean Especially Heinous?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, it's much longer than that. Isn't it?
60 pages long.
Yeah, it's 60 pages long.
So that's pretty long. Like, that's creeping into novella territory. If you're not vibing with it, then just skip it. I think I forced myself to read the whole thing because I hoped that it would deliver something. And it just didn't.
I was furious. I hated that. So basically, the concept of Especially Heinous, which when you start, you're like, oh, this is cute. What a fun idea. It's fake... episode by episode fake breakdown of episodes of Law and Order CSI, which one?
CSI? I don't know. One whatever of them detective shows.
Whichever American crime show has the words Especially Heinous in the intro. And as someone who does not watch it, but also I feel like even if I did watch it, this is just such a terrible concept for a short story. Because it never ends.
But it's a great concept for a story, but it's like reading... It's like reading the Wikipedia page of a TV show that you've never seen. If the TV show was well written and interesting and had a fun plot, then why not? I love stories that play with form. It's a really interesting way to write. Why not? Why not? Unfortunately, I just didn't get anything from the made-up show. Like, the plot didn't work for me. It was actively quite boring to read.
It was so boring to read.
Oh, it's so unlike us to start off so spicy.
But I don't.
We normally have to like work our way up.
I just feel like because I hated that so much, and almost because it's a short story collection, I feel more able to be like, I hated that.
Yeah.
Because it isn't like damning the whole book. It was just one section of it that I was just so unbelievably, shockingly bored by and couldn't. I feel like, I don't know, because I don't know a lot about short stories, I don't read them a lot, I haven't developed a lot of opinions about them, but I just remember someone once saying, like, a short story has to have a point, like, it has, like, a, I don't know what I mean by that, or what they meant by that, but I was just thinking how stupid and pointless that story was, and how much I hated it.
I mean, I think that's a really interesting comment, short stories have to have a point. I think they do have to deliver something, and for me, I just think it could be a number of things, you know, like you have to enjoy being in the world in one way or another, whether that world is revolting or incredible, moving or
funny, weird, sexual.
You have to feel some kind of feeling when you're reading it, and this left me cold, and for me that's the biggest crime.
Yeah, pardon the pun.
Especially heinous, you might say. But, you know, I enjoy creative form, and I would give her kudos for that, because I've never read anything quite like it.
Same.
And it, I mean, the greatest, the true crime is also being forgettable.
Yeah.
And it's not forgettable.
Because we hated it so much.
Yeah.
But apart from that, my review, okay, if you took out Especially Heinous, I would say I'm 100% on board with Her Body and Other Parties. I really, really liked it. How about you?
I also really liked it. I definitely think... So, there was definitely a bit of a glut in, like, 2016 of collections that lean on fairy tales. There's nothing wrong with that. Angela Carter did that. Like, that's fine. But it does mean that it starts to get difficult to differentiate collections. Like, if everyone is doing
riffing on
little twists on fairy tales.
A little dark tale.
Yeah, you know, like, then it kind of gets a little samey. Especially because, you know, there's a finite number of
things
fairy
to
tales.
Riff on.
That,
yeah.
Whereas both of these collections play with kind of the supernatural, the unusual, the weird. I think Julia Armfield calls it the squelchy side of humanity, which I love.
Yep.
Her Body and Other Parties plays with traditional ghost stories and folklore, which I fucking love. And the opening story is called The Husband Stitch. And is that the one with the green ribbon?
Yeah, which I love.
Oh, do you remember that story from when you were a kid? Yeah, so the green ribbon was in this short story collection of, like, kids' ghost stories that I remember reading when I was about 10.
Sounds like exactly the kind of book you'd own.
I have no idea what it was called. I'd love to find it again. I remember it had like a red border on the cover. And I just absolutely loved it. It's so gross and scary and ridiculous. I was so delighted. First story to be riffing on that.
Whereas I didn't know what this... I had no context for it. I didn't know that this was based on something. And I was still delighted. It's such a good story. It's such a, like, good, unsettling, disconcerting, weird story.
What was your favourite story from Her Body and Other Parties?
I think my favourite story... In terms of concept and execution, I would probably say it's Real Women Have Bodies.
Mm-hmm.
Which is about women disappearing.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like that's not one that stayed with me as clearly. But not because I didn't like it.
How about you?
So my favourite was Inventory.
Yeah, that was cool. That was cool. That would have been my second fave.
So Inventory is a woman who is recounting everyone she's ever slept with. So it's almost like a list. But then slowly as the story unfolds, you get little snippets into what she's doing. And it's kind of a post-apocalyptic vibe to it. And it's just like how she's passing time is recounting things from before. Such an incredible plot with a really interesting framework. Okay. And I feel like that's what especially Heinous kind of failed for me. It was a smart framework. Kind of gimmicky framework, but the actual plot didn't deliver. Yeah, should put it off. What about from Salt Slow? What was your favourite story from Salt Slow?
Let's have a look at the titles. Oh, I know which one it was. It was Cassandra After.
Yeah, interesting.
Yes.
So what's Cassandra After about?
It is about a young woman whose girlfriend has died and turns up in her home as a dead person.
Kind of. Not quite a ghost, quite a corpse. Like a kind of...
Something else.
I absolutely love that one.
I also liked Stop Your Women's Ears With Wax, which was the girl band one.
So this one is about a pop / indie / rock band who are kind of have a way of making their fans
become like
true wild misandrous.
And yeah, wildly violent against men. And it's kind of told by like their...
She's a videographer.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. I can't remember if it was like a tour manager. It was some member of the crew. Yeah, I love that. And I also liked The Great Awake.
Which is the story that won the White Review Prize.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Which is about people's sleep becoming detached from their bodies and becoming like a form kind of its own. Yeah.
Characters, like shadowy, ghostly characters that hang out. Getting up to mischief.
But also prevent you from sleeping, so the whole world changes to account for people not sleeping anymore.
But what I fucking love about that story is that the kind of the plot is not just the concept, it's actually that a girl in the narrator's building, her sleep never detaches. So while the rest of the world completely changes, she's left behind.
Yeah.
And I just absolutely love exploring this idea that even in the most ridiculously shit circumstances, like, that FOMO is real.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, true. So what do you think these books have in common? Like, what are the themes that you feel they share?
So I think they share a kind of feminist slant. They explore, like, what it is to have a body and to be a woman. They also share the kind of ghostly, folkloric vibe. I don't think either of them have any totally straight real-world stories in them.
No.
I don't think so. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Salt Slow is very meshing of humans and nature. Like that. Human bodies and animals and natural material, like
stone. The story Mantis, the story formerly Feral,
Salt Slow
itself, Granite, yeah.
Whereas her body and other parties is more the ghostly supernatural, I feel. I feel like they do have stuff in common and they are also different, but they sit together so neatly, just in terms of that, like, body horror stuff? I don't know.
Yeah, I think body horror is the right term to use. They're both quite grotesque.
Yeah.
In a way that I really like. I think they both have stories that lean heavily on plot, which I really like. I think sometimes short stories that read like vignettes can be very beautiful, but too many of them and you've lost me.
Yeah, and they're hard to differentiate, whereas I feel like these are not hard to differentiate. I can remember something about each of them.
I think that's... Okay, so this is my opinion as to why I feel like some people are intimidated by the short story and by collections. And it's because, you know, when you start a new book and you've read the back of the book, so you know kind of... You know what approximate world you're about to step into, whether it's going to be Victorian London, whether it's going to be, like, supernatural Spain.
Yeah.
Like, whatever. You kind of know your location, your time period, and you know your genre or themes. With short stories, every new story, you're going in blind. You never quite know if it's going to be real world or if it's going to be supernatural, if it's going to be a vignette with not much plot or if it's going to be super plot driven. It might have absolutely no dialogue. It might be all dialogue. And I think sometimes that, like, stepping into the unknown over and over again can be quite an exhausting process.
And knowing that you're almost going to be required to do some, like, mental gymnastics to figure out what's going on in some cases. Yeah, I think that's true. I feel like
with both of these collections, even though apart from the one story that we keep mentioning in Her Body and Other Parties, I feel like you can trust the author.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know quite where we're going to go and I don't quite know who I'm going to meet, but I trust that I'm going to have a good time.
Because these are cool ladies with good taste who know what they're doing. You know, we were saying that none of the stories are based in, like, the real world.
Yeah.
Is Smack the jellyfish one? That's quite real worldy, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
That doesn't have any elements of, like, someone turning into a lobster or whatever.
I have to be honest, that's the only one in the collection I can't really quite remember.
Yeah, I think that was the weakest story for me in Sort Slow, which is otherwise very consistent. It's about a woman who's just got divorced and is holed up in her husband's summer home to prevent him from something, and then all of these dead jellyfish wash up on the beach. But that, yeah, I feel like it's...
the squelchiest story.
In the jellyfish squelch.
Yeah. But I guess what I like about the worlds that Julia Armfield creates is that they are very, otherwise very straight and very real.
Yeah, yeah.
A little twist.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, informally feral, a teenage girl, her parents separate and her dad falls in love with a woman who lives across the street who has adopted a wolf. Called the wolf Helen and dresses it in little pinafores, but it is still like a literal wolf. Like, it still shits everywhere and runs around and has fleas and bites people. And I just love how straight that story is, apart from that one little element.
Agree. I totally agree. There's another one that I just saw on the thing and I would like to remember which one it was. The Collectibles.
Oh, yeah. That was the one about the household of women who one of them's heartbroken. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Then they start making a fake guy. Yeah.
Have you seen the movie May?
No.
Oh, my God. Okay. That story reminds me of one of my all-time favourite horror movies called May, which has a very similar plot.
Yeah. I feel like that didn't have any supernatural elements, but it was very horror-ish by the end.
Yeah, I mean, I guess when I say, like, the real world, I mean, I guess I wouldn't class that kind of horror, body horror stuff as real world, even though,
You mean, like, things that would happen within the realms of most people's everyday lives?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's nothing really in either of them, except for maybe Smack, the dead jellyfish one, in Sort Slow, and there's nothing in Her Body and Other Parties, I would say.
None that are just... Yeah, yeah.
What's So, you know the one about the woman in Her Body and Other Parties who gets gastric surgery? What's the point of that one? I can't remember that. Called Eight Bites? I can't remember what the kind of... Is there a sting in the tail of that one?
Yeah, I think it's that it's just an exploration of... Okay, I'll give you that. I feel like this one doesn't have anything... like, otherworldly in it.
But more, not even just is it otherworldly, like, I can't really remember whether that was something that even in a real world sense I felt had a kind of powerful little punch or something.
I feel like it was punchy.
Yeah, I remember it the least.
That's, I feel like, because it's the least. Because yeah. I feel like it's one that... Because so, 8 Bites is about a woman who follows in her sister's footsteps and decides to have gastric band surgery. And it's quite kind of pensive and reflective. And when she finally tells her daughter... Her daughter is really upset that she's risking her life and really mad at her that she's, like, rejecting her body and trying to sculpt herself into something else. I don't think it's necessarily, like, the punchiest in terms of plot. But again, like, it's a world that I was interested in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think, except for the one that we mutually hate, especially Heinous, I loved the experience of reading all of them. Yeah. I thought just the... Yeah, I loved her writing, and I loved how that was adaptable across lots of different, like, places and people and forms. And
what was quite exciting to me as well about Her Body and Other Parties is that I feel it was a short story that lots of cool internet ladies seem to be reading, and short stories very rarely seem to, like, penetrate the wider...
reading community.
Yeah, like, I think people who like short stories, you know, will often... talk about the same collections, but people who don't especially, like, single out short stories as a thing they enjoy don't tend to... That doesn't tend to be, like, a bestseller.
Yeah, no, totally. I also didn't really... Obviously, it's been out for, like, a year and a half at this point, and I've been seeing the cover everywhere for ages. I've had a copy for ages, and I didn't really understand what it was. I think maybe because of the title, I got it into my head that it was, like, a kind of straight up just cool millennial lady collection. Mm. I didn't know that there was any horror, gothic, ghosty element at all. Like, that entirely passed me by until either Jenny or Beth were reading it recently, who are two good friends of ours. Yeah, I don't know how that passed me by, but I think I just wasn't that interested because I didn't think it had anything, like, particularly... to sell it to me.
Anything particularly spicy.
Yeah, I think maybe I do want... You know, when I'm reading a short story collection, I want to be reading Shirley Jackson. So the closer that I can get to that. You know, I just want to...
Aside from The Lottery, which anyone who has anything to do with short stories should read. It's like a rite of passage. And that one that was part of the Penguin...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What was it called? Missing Girl?
Yeah. That, like, and that was three stories.
Those, but I only read the first one in a little mini collection, I think. But yeah, apart from those, I have never read any Shirley Jackson short stories.
I feel like I did, like, a long time ago, and have been chasing that high ever since. but yeah, I want that. That's almost what I'm seeking from short stories. And I know that's not what short stories are, but because I think that was my first experience of reading short stories, I want to be reading them, waiting for the weird, horrible thing to reveal itself. And that's what Her Body and Other Parties does. Which makes it unfair on anyone who doesn't write, like, dark, gothic, weird, horror-ish
things. So are there any short story collections you can think of that you've read and enjoyed that don't have that kind element. Of...
I can't really think of that many short story collections. Oh, I've obviously A Trib by Ellie Williams,
that's exactly
who we love.
What I was thinking of.
Which is, like, just... and but that's so delightful in other ways that... Who needs horror?
But maybe the key is just that it's unexpected.
Yeah,
it's like,
I need
I want
the unexpected
to be surprised in
yeah.
some way.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that Ellie Williams does really well. It's not that her story, she doesn't have, like, sting in the tail, like Roald Dahl. She yeah. doesn't have, like gross, unexpected horror. It's just they are surprising in that they are so delightful and unique.
And sometimes really moving, which I love. But yeah, I haven't really read that many short story collections. Can you think of any that I've read?
I can think of some that I've recommended to you that you probably haven't read.
I really I will read What It Means When a Man Falls from the Sky.
That's exactly what I was thinking of. Oh my god, I love that.
I'm really looking forward
so
to reading
much.
That. I just thought
that's Leslie Arama.
Yeah, I would probably have maybe read that in the recent past if I wasn't reading these and didn't have other stuff to do, but I will come to that soon.
The thing with short story collections is that they're kind of like albums, but it's perfectly normal to say to someone, oh my god, I've been absolutely slamming this Billie Eilish album but you should listen to Top Banger Bad Guy that absolutely isn't a meme because everyone hates it so much. But you know what I mean? With an album, you can recommend one song and it's like, yeah, if you like that, you'll love the whole thing, but this is my favourite.
Yeah.
Whereas with a short story collection, I don't think I've ever had someone be like, please just read the title story. It is so fucking good. If you like it, you'll love the rest of it. But no one ever does that. We just say, read the whole thing, read it in order.
Yeah, true. What's that about?
I don't know.
Very interesting.
I think, to be honest, maybe sometimes I do say it. Like, I certainly said with What It Means When a Man Falls from the Sky, just my favourite story in the collection is either that one or Who Will Greet You When You Come Home? Something, I think that's the title. And I said to so many people, just read that one. Just read that. Like, if especially, like, at the time, the Margaret Atwood, The Handmaid's Tale had just hit TV. And I was like, the story has, like, similar themes and ideas in it. Like, oh, just everyone needs to read it. But you just don't, do you? No one buys a whole collection to just read one story.
Maybe I will read the whole thing. Soon.
See, that's it. See, you're doing it. You're doing the same thing. You're saying, okay, maybe I'll read the whole thing.
Yeah, but if you like the whole thing that much, which I assume you do,
yeah,
then I might as well. Also, like, it's no skin off my nose whether I read one or the whole thing, you know?
Do you ever... So the other thing that I like to do is I will return to my favourite stories in collections over and over again.
I don't really reread things that often. I'm not a rereader.
I love to reread. I love to reread.
Yeah, I just feel like, especially these days, what with the pod and all the other bookish business that we have to do because we're so famous, I don't feel like we have as much time for such things.
I definitely reread a lot less now because there's always something else that I should be reading.
Exactly.
I feel like rereading is such a kind of indulgence.
So I often reread via audiobooks. Would you ever listen to an audiobook of a short story collection?
I guess never say never.
But no.
But no. I mean, I guess theoretically, but one of the things, the way that I read short story collections is I will never go into a story not knowing how long it is.
Yeah, which was the mistake I made with Especially Heinous.
Yeah, like, I mean, I knew exactly how long it was when I started, and sometimes, this might be sacrilege, if there's a story that's super long in the middle, I'll leave it to the end. Because
you read on the tube.
Exactly. And like one thing that I've learned over all the collections that I've read is that you can't stop reading a story halfway through. You just fucking can't. Yeah. You can't pick up the threads in the same way. With when you're reading a novel, okay, so you might miss a few bits in the wash, like between stopping and starting, but ultimately you're still going to be on the same page
Been in that world for such a long time already.
Yeah, like you should be able to pick up where you left off, and I certainly don't treat chapters in books the same way in the same way.
I agree.
But with a short story, you need to swallow it whole.
Yeah.
And like a super long story, like a 75 pager, I will probably accept that I'm going to have to take a break, but I think, you know, a story of that nature is written knowing that that may be the case. Yeah. But yeah, listening on audio, I would never know how long the story was, and it wouldn't fit into my busy lifestyle.
Your oeuvre.
The other thing is that, I don't think you could have a collection all narrated by the same person.
Interesting.
Because you don't have a single narrator.
True. And I think
one of the most important things, in my opinion, about approaching short stories is... you have to be listening out for characters, like, voice. Because sometimes it's going to be the same fucking narrator from a story that you read 3 or 4 stories ago.
Yeah.
And sometimes you have to work a little bit before you realise that. I can think of a few collections that do that. Abigail Ullman, Hot Little Hands, which I absolutely love. And that is the total opposite of these collections that we've talked about today. It's all very much set in the real world. Very, like, cool millennial ladies. My favourite story in that is about these 2 teenagers who go back to their, like, middle school horse summer camp. And they go and hang out with, like, these younger girls. And, oh, it's just perfect. But that has the same character pops up in, like, 3 stories. And also Chris Powers' collection, Mother.
Oh, I really want to read that. Yeah, Mothers.
Mothers, yeah. He also has some characters that pop up again. So again, like, I just think if you are listening on via audio, I want a different narrator for every different character, every different
voice character story. Yeah.
But B, you know, is that going to affect the reading experience?
True. Tell you the one way I have been consuming, you know, you asked me if I've been reading short stories. I haven't been reading collections, but as we know, a recent and delightful publishing trend has been tiny books.
Yeah, I love a tiny book.
So like the Penguin ones that you gave away as wedding favours.
Oh yeah.
At your blessed nuptials.
The old nups.
At the old nups last October. So the Penguin ones and also the Faber ones. That
I used to be really down on releasing single stories because in like 2012, everything that happened in that time period for me is 2012, so that might not be accurate. Zadie Smith had a single story, I can't remember what it was called now, and they were charging $7.99 for it.
That's so wild.
For a fucking short story. So I used to be really down on it because obviously no one bought that. I was book selling at the time. We had just so many copies left over. And that irritated me because I just think it's kind of ripping off the consumer. But actually, if it's a sensible fucking price, which in my view is about $2.99 maximum.
Which is what the Faber ones are, yeah. Right? Faber ones are £3, Penguins are £1. And obviously some of the Penguin ones, I don't know about all the Faber ones, but some of the Penguin ones are bits of non-fiction books. They're not specifically short stories.
And some of them are also bits of longer fiction, aren't they?
Maybe, yeah. I lose track of who does what, but yeah, delightful. I really love it. The Shirley Jackson one, I know we mentioned it before, but the Shirley Jackson one that comes in a Penguin format is so good. Those three stories by Shirley Jackson for one English pound.
It's like rude not to
but
honest.
Also they are all so good and memorable. Like I remember all of them and I love them all. But I read, you know, when we went to that Faber soiree?
Yes, the spring party.
The spring party where I encountered my new boyfriend, Lenny Henry.
Oh, yeah.
we will not go into that here. But the Katsuo Ishiguro one that I got from that party, and obviously it is well documented, Katsuo Ishiguro is one of my all-time favourite authors, if not my all-time favourite. I did not like the short story. It's called Come Rain or Shine.
I haven't read that one.
It's not great. It doesn't have a point, really. Kind of. I don't know. I didn't enjoy it.
Did it just leave you cold?
It left me cold in a way that... Obviously, he is not a hot-blooded feelings author. That is not what he does. But I don't feel like his writing generally, like, leaves me cold. But I think he's someone who needs more space to establish the significance of those understated feelings. And I just think that a short story of, like, sub 50 pages or whatever it is not it. So, yeah, I was very surprised that a short story by one of my favourite writers didn't do it for me. But obviously the Sally Rooney one, Mr. Salary, which is also published in that series.
I loved that story.
It's so great. And it operates in the same world as her other, you know, her novels, but it's its own little thing. And it's really delightful and interesting.
But that's also a story that I would say has quite understated feelings in it. Like, it's quite a slow-burning little world that those characters inhabit, but I think that's why it works so much, because it just leaves you absolutely yearning for more.
To know the backstory, what was it like when they lived together, like, tell me more, I want to know, yeah.
And I think that's like, it's like the perfect, I just think short stories and songs, they have so much in common, and like the best songs leave you wanting to just go straight back to the beginning and listen to them again. Like, you never quite feel like you've had enough.
That's how I feel about Old Town Road.
I don't even know that song.
Oh my god.
What? Town Road, who's that by?
Lil Nas X feat Billy Ray Cyrus now. It's the one where it was, the one that they had to re-record to have more country elements because the country chart is racist and...
Yeah.
Anyway, that's how I feel about Old Town Road. But yeah, that's my current experience with short stories, is I've actually in the recent past been more likely to read them as those tiny little books than I have been to read a collection, which is interesting, you know, and if it does... If publishing tiny little books gets more people thinking about short stories, that's cool.
That would be my absolute dream. It would be to be told, like, all right, you've got 25 authors. We're going to publish 25 of their stories in miniature. Choose.
That would be such a good...
The time of my life.
If any publisher is listening, Alice is an expert in short stories, has very good taste, and is very cool. So basically, I think you should get her to do that. Live her dream.
Let's do it.
What are you reading at the moment, my dude?
I am reading a book called The Red Word by...
Sarah? Is it the bottom?
Yeah, I can't read it. Oh. I'm reading The Red Word by Sarah Henstra.
Does it bang?
It bangs. I'm like a quarter of the way in, so, you know, jury's out. But I think we'll do an episode on it.
I was going to say, let's not say too much in case we sabotage our future endeavours.
Blow my load, so to speak.
Unusually for me, I'm reading three books.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I often have a paper book and an audio book on the go. But at the moment, I have a paper book, which is fiction, an audio book, which is fiction, and a non-fiction book, which I'm reading on my Kindle app on my phone. For reasons too boring to go into, but the paper book I'm reading is Field Notes on Love by Jennifer E. Smith, which is a YA novel. I'm reading that because apparently I'm chairing an event next week with Jennifer E. Smith and Sarah Barnard, who wrote Beautiful Broken Things and Fierce Fragile Hearts, at a branch of Waterstones in London on Tuesday night. I'm not too... clear on the details, but...
the details are hazy.
Exactly.
But we'll be somewhere doing something.
I will be somewhere on Tuesday night.
People normally tell you where you're supposed to be.
Yeah. I trust my publicist, Sabina, at Macmillan, to tell me where I need to be.
Can I just say that Bethany just put a whole chocolate in her mouth and then just regurgitated it, like a little owl spitting out a pellet?
It was whole. I hadn't even sucked it. It hasn't even melted, even a little bit. My timing was all off, so I took it out. So, paper. That one. Audiobook, because I love to be simultaneously ahead of trends and also behind them, I'm listening to Wolf Hall by Hilary Mantel.
Who?
Because I feel like I've missed that boat, but I could get ahead of the third book coming out next year if I listen to them now. If I listen
you
to the two.
You do love a beefcake on audio, don't you?
Yeah, this is my new Crimson Petal in the White.
Yeah. How many hours?
So what I'm finding so interesting is, for context, Crimson Petal in the White, best book ever, is 41 hours long.
Oh my god.
Wolf Hall is a mere 24 hours.
That's wild!
I know.
When you set those books side by side, you would think Wolf Hall would be longer.
Wolf Hall, so I actually started reading Wolf Hall in Kindle format 6 years ago. I read quite a lot of it and then never finished it, and I would like to finish it, and I'm enjoying it so much more on audiobook, partly because all the characters, at least three characters, are called Thomas in the first like hour of the audiobook alone, and obviously you can't really do anything about that because it's about history, and annoyingly nobody had particularly interesting names in Tudor times.
Names anyway.
Tommy.
Yeah, Tommy.
Tomo.
Tom-Tom.
Tom-Tom go. So I'm enjoying it a lot more because the narrator is great and differentiates the voices quite well without doing silly voices. Mm-hmm. I'm enjoying it a lot. I'm finding it much easier to follow. I think I will finish it. I'm really delighted about it. And then I will move on to Bring Out the Bodies because I'm rich in Audible credits at the moment. I'm loving life.
See, people do love them, but I don't, you know, sometimes when you just look at something... I don't know. I can't think of a good comparison. But you just think, absolutely the fuck not, my friend.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know. Like, when someone's like, oh, should we go for a walk up that massive hill and just see what's at the top? No, let's not. I can't be bothered.
Whereas Crimson Petal in the White, I feel looks intimidating, isn't. Yeah. I think the key difference between these two long historical novels written in the 21st century, Crimson Petal in the White is just long. It's really accessible, it's really easy to read, it's really fun and funny and weird. It's just long, it's just got a lot of words. Whereas Wolf Hall, kind of confusing, bit disorienting at the beginning, quite dense in lots of ways.
Everyone's got the same name.
Everyone's got the same name.
Yeah.
And it is based on history, which obviously is boring because history is for nerds. So, yeah, I think... those are the key differences between two historical beefcake books that I am consuming or have consumed on audiobook. The third book I am on at the moment, I started reading on my Kindle yesterday. It's so unbelievably interesting, and I don't read nonfiction. You don't really either. We're not nonfiction people. Unless it's crime-ish.
If it's got a murder in it, I'll read it. But if it's crime and there's no murder, then I'm not interested.
I think this is a non crime book that may have murders in it. Because it's called Nothing to Envy by Barbara Demick. And it's about North Korea. A thing I know nothing about.
Hmm.
But I will soon. I've just heard from a lot of people that this is like a kind of definitive non-fiction book about North Korea.
Okay.
And I am very interested in it already. I've already learnt so much and I've only been reading it for like 40 minutes.
How do you decide between reading the non-fiction and reading the fiction, the physical books that you have?
It was just because I had more time to read yesterday than I anticipated and was left on my journey home from my parents' house without a physical book. So I had to read something from my Kindle and I thought...
Oh, I see. Was that why you said... For reasons that are too boring to go into.
Yes.
I see. Because I, you know, yeah. It's relevant.
That's why I'm now reading three books in different formats. But I'm really liking having this nonfiction book on the go because it means, oh yeah, here's another boring prosaic thing about how I read books. Most of the time I sit down on the tube,
mm-hmm.
which means I can read a paper book. But if I have to stand, I don't want to read a paper book because I need a hand to hold on to a pole. So I need something that I can hold in one hand, which
can
is...
Can you not do a one-handed paperback?
I can, but it's inconvenient.
I just feel like because you have longer fingers than I do.
Yeah.
So you should be an absolute pro.
But I need to turn the page sometimes.
You do it with... You hold the book open, and then you do it with your face.
Yeah, I know, but I don't... I just feel like I'm ludicrous enough as it is. You know, I just... I look ludicrous enough to the world at
or
large.
Or you do that thing where you, like, surf for a minute. Like, you balance.
Yeah. It's just, it's too risky.
You know what stresses me out about doing that? Then someone takes your pole spot.
Yeah, I can't live like that.
Fuck, it drives me insane.
Yeah. The chocolate just went in and out of my mouth again. So yeah, I do sometimes like to read on my Kindle because it's not on an actual Kindle, it's on the app on my phone. So I can read that while I'm on the tube. Or just when I'm like out and about, if I've by some miracle forgotten my book or whatever. I never have to be bored. Also, this, because it's non-fiction, I feel like I can treat it more like a podcast and, like, turn it on, turn it off.
Dip in and out.
Yeah. But, yeah, I just thought it was an interesting thing to learn about because I don't know anything about North Korea. I only have ever consumed media about and from South Korea for obvious reasons. So, yeah, that's what I'm doing. That is a very long answer to what am I reading at the moment.
It was a fun journey. I'm still plugging away with The Five because I listen to audio for about 20 minutes a week, which is when I'm doing housework.
Remind me what The Five is. Oh my god. I've literally listened to it.
Yeah, you know, it's the Jack the Ripper. The five canonical victims of Jack the Ripper. It's a historian has painstakingly recreated their history, like where they grew up, who their parents were, where they're from, what they did with their days.
Basically how they ended up. On the street of Whitechapel.
Yeah.
For whatever reason. What elements in their life, what socioeconomic factors, what personal things led them to be wandering around Whitechapel at night.
And it's great.
It's so
really
good.
It's really great. It's really interesting.
I just think the title is so forgettable and also could be a thriller, could be...
Agreed.
It could be anything.
Agreed.
But I listened to this on audiobook just before I went to Norway. While I was dying with food poisoning that I may or may not have got from Rochelle Canteen at the ICA.
Oh my god, she's naming names.
I'm naming names.
It's on record.
And it was just wonderful. I loved listening to it.
See, this is the thing though. So I've been plugging away at it for about a month. And that's why, like, anything that's longer than about 10 hours, I have to really seriously consider if it's worth my Audible credit.
Whereas because I had just come off the back of listening to Crimson Petal and the White, I was like, ooh, a little
she's
snack
ready.
Of a... A tiny little short story of an audiobook. But yeah, I love The Five. I think it's so interesting. Before we go.
Yes.
Speaking of historians.
Yes.
We've discussed on WhatsApp the literary world scandal of the week.
Oh my fucking god. Naomi
Wolf.
Not Naomi Klein, not Naomi Wood,
not Naomi Alderman,
not
Naomi Novik, no other Naomi, only Naomi Wolf.
That freaking story.
So for anyone who is not extremely online or doesn't consume any media that would talk about this, the historian and writer Naomi Wolf discovered live on the radio in an interview with other historian, much more knowledgeable person than her, Matthew Sweet, that... The whole premise for her new book, which is being published.
It's out, it's man. Out. It yep. is out. I saw it on the shelves in foils not about a day ago.
Called Outrage, published by Virago. Outrages, published by Virago, is false. And
she fucked it. She fucked it up.
She did. She fumbled that ball badly on the basis of misunderstanding one particular term, but also other things. Like, you, I think she's trying to reduce it to that, and she's saying that it's kind of two specific instances on two different pages, but actually there's quite a lot more to it than that.
Which, apparently, now I know that this has, like, the whole thing has caused a lot of people to talk about who should and shouldn't write history books, and, I mean, that's a complicated issue. But my main thing is I just can't fucking believe that no other historian worked on this book. Do you know what I mean? Like, so she has a bit of a reputation for being quite slapdash. And, like, some of her books are kind of wild, like, in her approach. She has, like, a bit of a conspiracy theorist vibe to her, apparently. I haven't read any of her work. But I can't believe that they are, you know, you're publishing this entire book about historian, Victorian history, and you don't have any kind of fucking expert fact-checking it.
But she's That's meant wild. To be the expert. That's the problem, is, like...
Yeah, but surely, like, what about peer review?
Yeah.
You know, like,
this
why...
is, and why is this peer review only happening right now, after the book has been published?
Because at the end of the day, like, one, you know, you kind of have to trust that a source, like, that, you know, a book that has been published and has gone through some kind of rigmarole to confirm that it's accurate.
Legit. Well, in this case, it didn't. But can you literally imagine... Not that I sympathise with her in any way, but can you imagine that happening to you?
No, this is the thing, because I am a very slapdash person.
So yes, you can, in many ways.
This absolutely would happen to me. It's just that I would never write non-fiction of that kind.
And then
because I know myself. I'll put in all sorts of shit.
If you look at the shit that, like, Hallie Rubenhold, who wrote The Five, I follow her on Twitter.
Oh,
she gets
God.
Shit every single day.
It's
from
rubberologists.
Yeah, from these, like,
nauses.
Horrible old men who are obsessed with Jack the Ripper, who basically doesn't figure in Hallie Rubenhold's book at all.
Yeah, she's got no interest in him.
Zero interest in him. And that has really rubbed people up the wrong way in the Ripperology community, which sounds ludicrous. But,
God, I hate them.
You know, and it's just, it's so annoying that someone has presented the world with this incredibly interesting, detailed, well-researched, thorough, and, like, incredibly lifelike rendering of real things that happened, and get shit every single day at events, on Twitter, write, you know, letters to the editor, whatever. And then people like Naomi Wolf are just stomping around, making stuff up because they don't understand. I don't know. I hate it. Also, I've heard she was really rude to a cool person that I know, so...
Tell me off camera.
I will. Do we have any last words for our friends at home?
No, I'm done.
Me too. If you enjoyed this podcast, I would ask you to recommend it to a friend, but also mostly... go on your app and leave a review, preferably 5 stars, and because that would just make our lives better. And also, you're listening to it because you enjoy it, so it would, you know, the logic would go that you would like other people to hear it too, so you could talk to them about how cool Alice and Bethany are.
Oh.
We will see you next time.
Bye.